Welcome into This Has to Work. Today, Jay Johnson is joining me. Jay is a founder, business leader, mentor, advocate, and a Morehouse man. Jay is the founder and owner of College Prep U and the founder of Prep Intel. The Prep Intel platform utilizes AI, machine learning, and predictive analytics to deliver accurate and personalized college matching and enrollment solutions, helping students find their dream college experience. Jay, welcome to the show.
Man, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Yeah, appreciate it. So you've devoted so much of your life and career to education, but I want to start out with you teaching the listeners something that you taught me. And in my intro, I referred to you as a Morehouse man. Tell everyone what that means and how it's different from being a man of Morehouse.
Yeah, excellent question. So a Morehouse man is an individual that attended Morehouse College, which is a small, private, all-male, liberal arts, HBCU, historically black college university, located in west of Atlanta, West End. And so it's really cool because in order to become a Morehouse man, you must graduate from Morehouse College, which means that when you're enrolled there, you become a man of Morehouse until you graduate it.
I think it's an important distinction, and I screwed it up the first time I referred to you, and you very politely explained it to me, which some people may not have done it so politely, so I appreciate that.
No worries.
You may not know this, or you didn't know this before today, but you and I share some career history.
Okay.
So at one point in time, you ran a multi-state call center for DirecTV and AT&T.
Yes.
In my previous life, I ran a call center selling Dish Network, okay, a rival service right across the country. And the thing I wanted to bring up about this is people hear the term call center and they immediately start cringing, right?
Right.
Somebody trying to sell them a credit card they don't want or a TV service they don't want or whatever the case may be. But in my experience, I actually took a lot from that, which was a lot of professional careers for people got started in call centers.
Absolutely.
And the skill set that they had to develop, you know, working those phones and talking with customers and never knowing what was going to come across on the other end, that was just kind of formative career kind of skills for them. Did you find that to be your experience as well?
Ooh, so a call center, I think, has a bad rap. You know, people look at call centers as, you know, sweatshops. Almost, right? But I can tell you, you know, my call center experience and managing many call centers, I had reps whose career started in the call center and elevated in the call center, and they stayed call center reps, and they were making more than attorneys, doctors, you know, all that. I think one of the most, one of my proudest moments was one day we had a visitor from DirecTV come to one of our call centers in Jackson, Mississippi. So we pull up in the call center that's located off Capitol Avenue, downtown Jackson. We get out in the front. The driver takes the car around. We get up, go to the call center, meet everybody, meet and greet. And so the call center had like different levels. And so we leave the level and we end up going out the back way just to show him the facilities. And we go into the employee parking lot. So we go into the employee parking lot, and I mean, it's nothing but like Lexus, Infinities, Mercedes. Like, you know, he's like, man.
He's like, how much are we paying people?
He was looking around. He was like, man, so who else shares this building and things of that nature? And I was like, oh, okay. I said, I think it's like one law firm that has like two members. It's a two-member practice. And he was like, well, who all these cars belong to? I was like, the call center. And he was like, these call center reps drive these cars. And we're in Jackson, Mississippi. And I was like, absolutely. And I mean, he was just shocked and astonished because I was like, yeah, we got the goal for the call center reps in Jackson wasn't to hit management. They thought management was a downgrade in pay. And so once their commission structure hit, as well as different type of quarterly incentives and bonuses, I mean, you got guys making up to $200,000 a year taking calls where people were yelling at them.
Right.
And so that center in Jackson was a retention center. So when people say, hey, I'm going to cancel, okay, great, we want to get you to the retention center, they get someone who specializes in listening to someone's problems, understanding what the problem and positioning a solution, and then turn around and upselling them more service. So I'm calling to cancel my whole service. Now, not only am I keeping you guys, but I just added voicemail.
Right.
And a cell phone. He was like, what? And so like
those guys. And at least one Lexus car payment in the process, right?
Exactly. So that was one of the things that I think that I was able to really apply to my own journey as an entrepreneur was, one, grit. Two, you know, the key to selling anyone isn't selling and telling, is teaching. Mm-hmm. And then, but you got to listen. So once you can hear what the problem is, understand the frustration of that individual, you can then find a solution in the frustration, because people really tell you what it was. And one of the techniques that we taught our reps, and I still use to this day, which is mirroring. Yeah. You know, we just say the last three words that someone said, and then they'll be like, you know, I hate this place. So you hate this place? This place? And it was like, yes, you know, my phone never works and this like that. And next thing you know, we find out the issue, do this, that, and third, and now they loving us, you know?
Did you find that you spent a tremendous amount of your time kind of developing, and not even like call center skill sets, but kind of professional skill sets? Like, I mean, a lot of times, at least in my experience, was this might be the first professional environment that some of these operators or these associates had ever been in. And so you had to like explain to them like why showing up on time is important. Absolutely. And like why coming back from lunch on time is important, and not calling out sick, or, you know, kind of bringing your best self to work and all that kind of stuff. And did you find that to be the case in your experience as well?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, it was something a little bit different. When I was in college, my first internship was at Bell South. And so I was that person who learned that ability as well. Being in college and not really having to understand how in a workplace, timing is everything. You know, if you say you're going to be here or you schedule to be here at a certain time, you need to be there. Bell South had a very strict policy on tardiness. And so, you know, once you see how someone can, you know, lose their job because they were late to work that day, late from a break, and late from lunch, those are three separate write-ups.
Oh, wow.
You're fired by 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, and so to me, you know, I learned that, and then being able to show others and then see how it impact, you know, not only the call center flow, but really how it impact how you do business.
Right.
Because, you know, one of the things that one of my managers said that I'll never forget, he was like, you know, if you're late today, then how unprepared were you last night? Mm. And I was like, man, he's like, because if you got a call, the bank said that, hey, if you, you know, come to the bank at 9 o'clock in the morning, we'll give you $1 million. You'll be there at 9 o'clock that night.
Yeah.
You know, right. So like act as if, you yeah. know, this is $1 million decision.
Yeah. So in that experience, coaching, empowering people, all of those things, do you think that's kind of part of where you caught the bug? Because other than that part of your career, as far as I can tell, you've really been, you know, really focused on admissions, specifically college admissions, and helping not only the students themselves, but the parents, the school systems, all the supporters, all the facilitators kind of around that. Like right. Everything about your kind of, let's say your adult professional career has been focused on those things. Was that part of your journey? Was that part of like what inspired you to do that? Or was it just like, hey, just another extension of things I take seriously?
So actually, to be honest with you, man, it came from my mom. So my mom was an entrepreneur, and with my mom being an entrepreneur, she ran a business. She actually opened up the very first barbershop in College Park, Georgia. And so I watched my mom dominate a male dominated industry, and also watch her handle cash. But the things that I saw the most was that my mom never was late. You know, she never opened up her shop late. You know, she never closed too early. She adhered to whatever hours. She addressed every customer, and she required the same thing of her barbers. And, you know, it's funny because, like, looking back at it in hindsight, she was almost, you can almost compare her to, like, Nick Saban, you know, with this, and I'll tell you how. The reason why I draw this correlation is because, like, the way my mom taught barbers how to be entrepreneurs was she empowered them to be over their own business while they were under her shop. And so she held them accountable and responsible for everything they did or did not do. And so if someone couldn't make their booth rent, they had to go. You know, she treated them as if they were she was their landlord. And what she ended up putting out was individuals who ended up working for her not only went out and started either their own shop or became successful in their own right in different industries, but then, you know, they really attributed all of those things, that discipline that they never had, to her because she was super disciplined. Even just to be funny, one of them right now, currently as we speak, is the manager of Killer Mike.
Oh, wow.
Right. So we're talking like music industry and we're talking haircut. So like when I say Nick Saban, I mean like she trained individuals to be top coaches. And so for me, watching her, you know, have that grit and get up and do that. I didn't pay for my first haircut until I was 23. Okay. And so watching her get up every day, and then she wouldn't even cut my hair. I had to pay a barber in her shop to cut my hair.
That's awesome.
And so I learned that from her. And so then that helped me understand what, you know, professionalism looked like, but then grit, because she never quit, you know, and I've seen the hard times that she went through and the ups and downs. But for me, that made me look at every industry like there's something that you're providing for someone that need it, and you got to show up every time, because that person who's coming to you to pay you does not care how you feel. They're paying you for that job.
Right.
And that was it.
Yeah. So you spent an early part of your career in admissions, like literally doing admissions, I believe, at Miles College. And so you've gone on now to create two successful ed tech platforms. But I want to take a step back. Admissions, as you've shared with me, is not as straightforward as people think. They think you send in an application, somebody reviews it, they put you in the yes pile, the maybe pile, or the no pile. And then that's kind of the admissions thing. But Right. Nothing could be further from the truth. But my curiosity is, as you went through there and you saw how an admissions process worked, how did that inform what you went on to do with College Prep U and Prep Intel?
Yeah, excellent question. So I think the biggest issue that I saw, really a big gap, was the fact that between admissions and a family was a lot of just like misled information, you know, a lot of things that people couldn't research or, you know, necessarily find ways to solve, you know, the equation of, can I get in? And what happened is there's so many different terms. It's kind of like we see there's so many different terms that you hear people say, like rolling admissions, right? When you think of rolling admissions, it's like, okay, great. Well, that can be, hey, you know, their deadline actually is just ongoing until, you know, class start. Or rolling admissions can be, we've gotten so many GPAs and ACT scores at this level that we're going to roll up the requirements to get in. And so, you know, as a parent, you don't know that. As a kid, you don't know that. As an adult, you don't know that. But those are terminologies that are commonly used amongst different institutions and the reps who represent it, because that's the language we speak to each other. And it's really a way to confuse the buyer. And, you know, when I think about higher education, as wonderful as it is, it's the only industry where I know that you have a grown-up selling a product and service to a kid that costs six figures. And it's like all other responsibilities that, you know, for this kid are the teachers in school, and they're encouraging it, but the parents are not around for this transaction.
Right.
And so with that being said, it makes it so much easier when you have a grown-up telling the kid, well, once I qualify you for, you know, if you can go to the school, just tell me what you like, and that's the only thing I'm going to tell you. I'm going to show you the bells and whistles here to hype you up. And so it's an emotional play. And so what I figured out was that, you know, from a statistic standpoint, it doesn't matter if a kid is first gen or, you know, legacy, you know, the information that's given about admissions is not that transparent. It's always gray. You don't know that tuition rolls up 6% every year. You know, you don't know that. So that means the price that the students are told in the fall from the college representatives if they're a senior will not be the same price when they enroll as a freshman, you know, the following year. And so it's so much misinformation that I wanted to be able to create an environment where students can come, get the information that they need, make the best business decision, and that outcome not only support that student, but it helps the university because it helps them with the retention aspect of their admissions as well as their enrollment. And so ultimately, when we start looking at this industry, you know, it so lacks transparency. And that's what I wanted to create, just a very transparent process so that way individuals can make the best choice on both sides of the house, the families and the institution, and then everyone can be happy.
I would also assume that the lack of transparency creates all sorts of access issues. For sure. You know, it's overwhelming if with the best of information, right? But if your child is the first person in your family going to college or going for a university degree or something like that, it's overwhelming. I mean, if you haven't gone through it and you're going through it for the first time with your child and you can't be as helpful, I would imagine that some people just say, forget it. Like, I can't figure this out. I'm not going to do it. And, you know, best of luck. And, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of parents would rely on the guidance counselor, right? The guidance counselor role is so undefined.
Yeah.
Especially in this day and age. And they're so overwhelmed because, you know, you may have statistics state just here in Alabama, the average guidance counselor have about 300 students assigned to that person. But if you really look at the way school systems are set up, in a high school, you may have 4 guidance counselors, right? Each one is for a grade. Mm-hmm. And so that means that, you know, that kid will only be with that guidance counselor that 1 year. Well, statistics also show that over the course of 4 years, the total time that a student gets to spend a chance with their guidance counselor going over college readiness comes up to about 37 mm-hmm. minutes. Mm-hmm. But that's if they have that one counselor for 4 years. So if they got one person every year,
right,
then that's minimized even more. And that guidance counselor isn't that effective. So now when a parent thinks that the counselor is giving college readiness, but the counselor doesn't have time because they're handling disciplinary issues and all different type of things, they don't have that time nor the resource to even go to some of the trainings that some of the colleges offer to tell them the new admission trends. They're not going to be able to, they're not equipped to have the students, you know, to help the students out. So the parents don't know, the students don't know, and that a guidance counselor don't know. So then who knows, right? No one. So now you got that kid who is 17 years old, 18, making a decision where no one can help this kid out, and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with the rest of their life. And one of the things, you know, students hate the most is when someone asks them, so what are you going to do when you grow up? I don't know. What are you doing now that you're grown? You know, so I tell them, I ask them, what are you doing now that you're grown? You got a degree. What do you do with
right.
it? You know? And so it's a system that could be fixed with technology.
Right.
That's what I learned.
Which is a good segue into Prep Intel. So the thing I found interesting about it is, you know, you're selling to the institutions, you're selling in to the actual, we'll call them the primary users.
Yeah.
But it's really for the benefit of both sides of that equation that you just kind of laid out, right? Yeah. Which is universities, colleges, they want students that are not only going to do well at their university, at their institution, but is going to be additive to their cohort, right? Yep. To their class, to their school, to their community, all of those things. And it's incredibly hard to tell that in kind of traditional means.
Yeah.
And so you've developed Prep Intel. So talk a little bit about how that serves. I don't want to call it a matchmaker because that's way overly simplistic.
Right.
But how it helps those two kind of unknown entities find each other in a way that's really successful.
Yeah, no doubt. So excuse me, just in case I become a little bit too wordy, but I'll just break it down into two segues. Let's talk about how it benefits the institution first.
Okay.
So for the institution, if you think about it, an admission counselor, the person who go out and recruit the students, the average career is shorter than an NFL career. We're talking 3 years or less, right?
For the average college recruiter.
Average college recruiter.
Wow.
Their career is less than an NFL career.
Total career, just where they are?
Where they are typically.
Okay.
And depending on what their goals are, could be total. But definitely for per institution, you know, you'll have someone, and they can even be an alumni, and their career may be less than 3 years there.
So just when they have kind of that institutional knowledge, they really know what they're talking about, they can really kind of, you know, size stuff up,
yep.
They're gone.
They're gone. And the reason why is because it's okay for a person that work in this capacity to jump from college to college. So literally, it's just like sports. And so when you really take a chance and just look at what that mean that there's no consistency amongst the information that's dispersed amongst the general population of students. So now you got a college who has, you know, churn rate is ridiculous, trying to always hire. Let's just be very clear. There's never a great time for a college to have to hire people, right? Because every day is recruitment. Then you have a soaring number of students transferring or dropping out or just not going at all. And then when you look at the numbers for COVID, you know, like the numbers reduced because of lack of exposure. So when you talk about colleges who need to get, who live off of tuition in order to stay sustainable, they need recruiters to go out and get bodies. So the imperfect system states that, you know, The imperfect system states that a territory is comprised of schools where a pipeline is developed. So when you take an institution who's used to working certain pipelines, cities like Chicago, Atlanta, you know, Dallas, Houston, where they're known to send their students anywhere, any good college, you tend to beat these territories up. But then you miss territories like Wisconsin, you know, or like Iowa, things of that nature, because why? We don't have a representation from these students in the institution. But if you never send someone there, you'll never get them. And so ultimately what ended up happening is a school enrollment drops. They end up having to cut back on positions. They end up having to cut majors, you know, and they become academically stale. And once they become academically stale, you see the numbers reduce in their retention and in their graduation, right? And so now it becomes unappealing because only students got to go off, you know, the guideline that they use to determine if it's a good school is their graduation percentage.
Right.
And so now that institution is not viable. They're not getting the best students. They're not producing the best graduates, and they don't have the ability to hire the best instructors or professors. So therefore, now it becomes a customer service issue internally and externally.
Right.
What ends up happening in that, it's a recipe for closure. And if that institution closes, then that kills that community that's surrounded by it. So what we're looking to do is to say, all right, great, regardless of what your workforce is, you know, whether you have 15 reps or 3 reps, our technology will reduce, you know, the burnout rate with your admission employees, but it'll also give you the ability to market to other territories without having to physically send someone there. You don't have to worry about the barriers that are in front of you of people and their biases towards your institution, or whether they know about it or they don't know about it. You get directly to the students, and it's a dynamic list. That will allow the recruiter to be 5 times as effective in their job than it would if they had to traditionally pick their stuff up and go to a school and walk in and set up a table, right? So that's how we solve it on that side. Now let's go to the other side for the families. Like you said earlier, you know, it's tough for a student to try to figure out what to do, especially if their family does not know, right? Because they've never been involved in it, so they depend on someone else, and they'll say, you know what, you got to do it on by yourself. Well, this actually gets the family involved. Because now a student can upload their test scores, their transcript, they can upload their likes and interests and extracurriculars, and they can even upload letters of recommendation. Choose a school in any state or just choose a region, and our platform would tell them what schools in that region they have the best chance of getting into. We'll tell them which schools match their likes or their interests the most. Doesn't mean, because it matches their interests, doesn't mean they have the best chance of getting in.
Sure.
This just has everything you asked for. Then it shows what schools that our system will recommend based on their profile that they have the highest chance of getting into. And then you have some schools who just want to advertise in that area. By doing that, that student now get a chance to say, okay, great. Well, I want to see the schools that I like. They choose the school that they like. They see their chances of getting in. It may not be the best chance, but it matches everything they like. So they now will be able to see a prep intel score of their chance of getting in. We still will give them the ability to connect with the actual recruiter so they can talk to the recruiter and figure out if this is a good fit for them or not. And so with that being said, that allows them to find someone to talk to directly and consistently, which is very hard because sometimes it's easier to go through the white pages and yellow book nowadays to find, you know, something you want opposed to trying to find a counselor using technology. Secondly, our AI will create a curriculum for them to help them better their chances of getting in. So now it'll tell them, these are some of the things we encourage you to do. If it's standardized test prep, then it'll have test prep modules to help them improve their ACT or SAT score. But lastly, you know, once they see the schools that they can get into, it'll allow them to have that confidence when it's time for them to apply. And it makes them make better decisions. So instead of spending hundreds of dollars on applications just trying to see if I can get in, they can now be more precise in where they're looking to go to, and that will help them also, you know, make that decision. Overall, when you look at both sides of it, we're saving both money, right? We're saving the family money on useless applications that they're spending, traveling to schools that they have no shot getting into, and the emotional side and time. On the collegiate side, same thing, not having to travel, not having to spend the time to develop and formulate relationships and maintain relationships, which are severed when that recruiter's gone. And then most importantly, not having to worry about the expenses that come with trying to recruit in different areas, you know, the marketing side. They'll actually get a chance to see how much of territory that they're able to penetrate and gain through our algorithms.
Yeah, it's this conversation is super timely. I literally just did two more college visits with my oldest, and she went to two more Southeastern kind of large universities and could not have had two more different experiences. And on paper, they look very, very similar.
Yeah.
Their marketing is very similar. Their acceptance rate, very similar. Their, you know, target GPA, target ACTs, all of that stuff, very similar. In-state versus out-of-state, tuition cost, very similar. But then you get on campus and it's a completely different environment, or it's a completely different experience. And one of the things that has been surprising to me is you have some technology that has absolutely shoved this process into the 21st century, like with the Common App and other things that are going on as far as the applications. But then you have the other side of that, which is absolutely no technology advancements. Like, for example, doing your application for federal financial aid. I mean, that was a debacle, apparently, this last year, where it was online, it was offline. You, if you did it online, it didn't actually submit. Then you had to do it offline. And then when you did it offline, you were supposed to do it online. And so you had a lot of people that couldn't even get a basic answer on financial aid. I say all that to say that these universities, to your point, are basically pitching, you know, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000, $150,000 pitches. And ultimately, a lot of times, it's a sophomore tour guide walking them around making this $150,000 pitch, and frankly speaking, a pretty important life decision.
Yeah.
And without context, with all the bias in the world, because their whole thing is to just try to get you on campus.
Yeah.
And so it's been this thing where I keep looking around and I'm going, there's got to be a better way. And so, you know, hearing you talk about Prep Intel, it just makes a ton of sense. Now, with College Prep U, that was what I would call a service platform,
right?
It was very hands-on. It was kind of one-on-one in a lot of ways, all-encompassing, right? Because on that platform, you're working with the schools, you're working with the counselors, you're working with the recruiters, you're working with the parents, you're working with the students, and all of that to basically improve access and better outcomes.
Yeah.
Prep Intel is now a tech platform. And so in that transition for you as a founder, what skills and what things have you had to learn and push yourself to do? You're an incredibly motivated, ambitious guy, but what did you have to figure out and learn being, you know, a founder of a tech platform over a service platform?
Yeah, excellent question. So, and this is a two-part answer to this. One, being a non-tech founder, I had to understand truly, you know, the tech ecosystem, understanding, you know, how technology is formulated. I'm the person who comes in to cut the light on and it should cut on.
Right.
Right. But understanding the intricacies that go into that to make that happen is one of the areas that I heard about, seen about, but didn't really understand.
Sure.
Here's a quick example. I went back and watched one show and one movie that I absolutely loved, and it was crazy, but I didn't understand. I just thought it was amazing. The third DVD I've ever owned was Antitrust, right? Went back and watched that one. Completely different view of it now.
Okay.
You know, coming through, like, understanding the tech side to where beyond, I was like, from a capitalist standpoint, I get what you're doing, but, you know. But now I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Open source. Okay, I actually know what that means now, right? And the other one was, what's the show on HBO?
Silicon Valley?
Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Yes, man.
It's surprisingly accurate in all the cringiest ways.
Oh my gosh, bruh. Like, absolutely. Like,
sure.
I watched and I was like, wait a minute. I'm shaking my wife like, oh my God. I thought this was just a, you know, pseudo, like, made up thing, like TechCrunch. I didn't know that was real until now. It's real.
Yeah.
Like, and so now, you know, looking at that, I understand the technology side of it. Then I had to make a change. So with Prep Intel being service forward, it was for the students,
yeah,
right? Understanding how to help the families get from A to B. prep intel, the tech is really for the recruiters.
Yeah.
So with me being someone who served the students, but then also being a recruiter, the recruitment side was, if I had these tools, this will make my job much easier and more effective, and I can make my institution, you know, better.
Right.
And so I built that for the recruiters, so that way we can help the institution, help the recruiters do their job. But by if they do their job well, then the family benefits.
Yeah.
So it helps the families out. And so that's why I put the cost on them, to where, you know, the other side with College Prep U, it was like, let me help the families. And then that way they can go to the institutions. I know what the institution's looking for. If I can help the families go there, it helps the institution on that side. But the difference was, I didn't know the condition of the institutions.
Right.
Prep Intel, I understand the conditions of the institutions now. So now when we make that recommendation, we know that we're sending them to a school that actually is pretty sustainable,
mm-hmm.
and that kid will be able to graduate because the school won't be a financial dire and close.
Yeah.
And that helps us out a lot.
Yeah. So speaking of developing as a founder, you just completed kind of the program at TechStars in Tulsa.
Yes.
And I know we had a previous conversation a couple of weeks ago. You had a phenomenal experience. You got a ton out of it. I'm curious from your perspective, even so much so that I think rumor has it you've agreed to be their EIR.
Yes.
So that's a pretty strong statement of you know, support and of credibility. What made that program so good from your perspective?
A couple things. One, my mindset towards this has always been, when I say towards this, meaning open up a business in the tech sector, has always been one of a crock pot. And I think that I credit my journey to me just being always having a student mentality, you know, and, you know, just to kind of like give you a quick shout out and just let you guys know I'm not being paid to say this, but Matt, if it wasn't for you, it was a lot of things that I wouldn't have known. Like I literally had to break down my journey in very small, biteable chunks because it was a lot of things I didn't understand. Now, I'm a fierce business owner.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it comes to being a founder, it's a difference. A business owner and a founder are completely different, right?
So say more about that.
Business owner, you create a business, it's yours, you own it, right? You move and operate as someone who wants to have it, hold it, and don't want to share it, but you want to sell it to everybody. A founder, you just found something. You found an answer to a problem, and you need to get this answer to as many people as possible. And the only way it can be found, if people help you present it in a way it can be searched. And so you got to have others to get on board to kind of help amplify your voice so that way it can get out there and then it becomes something that people can use and they just pay for it.
Yeah.
And so that journey was difficult for me.
Yeah.
You know, my College Prep U is an S Corp. Prep Intel is a C Corp. And so everything that I learned in like any business class, business program, business degree, anything, accelerators, pre-accelerators, it was all predicated on, you know, just doing good practices and understanding who your people are. But to get to that point, even at TechStars, it started with conversations with individuals who were successful, who failed, who understood things, who did not understand things, and me being open enough to receive as much criticism as well as information about everything I didn't know. And just like with you, one thing I can tell you, and I said your name 1,000 times up in Tulsa, that, you know, out of all the conversations that we had leading up to me going to TechStars, and you was here with Prep Intel before it was Prep Intel, it was all under College Prep U, when it separated everything through the journey, was the fact that you taught me some of the basic core principles of understanding how VCs look at things.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't understand how an investor would look at things, I would only think of a bootstrapper. Mm-hmm. And how I think things should look.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that helped me out tremendously. So when I got to TechStars, I didn't have a view of entitlement, right? You know, you got some people that come there and expect that TechStars is going to give you investors, right? And they have a very strong network. And I love they put us in front of investors. But you don't look at your own preparation to be received by investors. And then can you handle the no's, the delays, and things like that? Well, talking to a great friend who is an investor, I knew that walking into any situation like that, that there are going to be investors who may like what I got or what I'm building, but it's not what they're looking for.
Right.
And so I was okay with the delayed process. I was okay with the, well, let's get back to you. I was very prepared to know that I could be in a room full of investors and not one of them may want to invest in me or my company,
yeah.
but they're all looking at me and I need to still have their respect when I leave.
Yeah.
And that was key for me. And so me having to, you know, take that mindset that you helped me develop and then actually give that to my cohort and say, hey, this is how you need to look at how the investment side looks. Don't expect anything because we're in Techstars. Techstars is just a vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps, it gives us these resources. It really shaped not only the way I look at the tech industry, but really how I do business. It helped me, it changed the ways I did business with College Prep U. It changed the way that, just this tech journey as a whole and not just necessarily Techstars, but it changed the way I do business for my family.
Mm-hmm.
It changed my interactions with my family,
really?
And with my friends. Because I look at things from a very objective view.
Okay.
You know, like everything is a matter of fact. It's just, all right, cool. This is an answer, but is it the only answer?
Right.
Is it the right answer?
Right.
You know, and then how can we apply this answer? Because this is the problem. One thing that's never mistaken, the problem never lies. It's mm-hmm. always in front of you.
Yeah.
The answer just may not be the truth.
Well, I think that also is what made you a great candidate for Techstars, even as somebody who's already been successful owning and running a business. You know, I think on paper, people might look at that and go, why does Jay need to go to Techstars?
Yeah.
He knows how to run a business. He knows how to grow a business. He's been very successful. You know, this isn't his first rodeo. I think you were a great candidate for that for a couple of reasons. But one is exactly what you just said, which is I'm not really interested in being right, but I am interested in the right answers.
Right.
And so you have to kind of be open and adaptable and say, I don't know this stuff, or I don't understand this stuff, or I'm going to have some humility or some vulnerability to ask questions from somebody I think might know this.
Yeah.
And I think I think it's a lesson for everybody, myself included, which is you can get to a point where you start thinking, well, I've got this figured out, or I think I know what I'm talking about. And that may or may not be true. But as soon as you start doing that, you stop listening
yeah.
to the people around you who might be offering you something. But I think I appreciate the kind words. I would say it's useless if you don't have the other person on the other side of the equation who's saying,
right.
I'm open to this, or I'm open to hearing this. I'm open to kind of learning and growing. So Jay, I want to make sure that we take advantage of this because, and this is somewhat selfish, admittedly, because I am going through this process with my daughter right now, but what is the biggest misconception parents or high school kind of juniors and seniors have about applying to college?
That they got time, that, you know, the process is, it should be what they want it to be. And also that their kid is special, you know, and that's it, you know, like your kid is special to you, but maybe average to an institution.
Mm.
Case in point, had a kid that had a 5.0 GPA, 35 on the ACT, 5.0 GPA.
That's crazy.
Exactly. And I mean, the kid literally did things like build a water infiltration system using solar energy in like Africa, like did all these different kind of things, right? But yet didn't get into MIT. And so mom was like, I don't understand. Like, we done everything right. Why did my kid not get in?
Yeah.
And was really getting rejection from like certain schools. Like, I hate to say it, but this kid was like flying into New York City to go visit like NYU and Columbia and RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology.
Yeah.
And literally, and it was crazy because you got to think, like, what they call Ivy Day is April Fool's Day, right? It's April 1st.
So explain that a little bit.
So April 1st is a day that most of these very selective colleges are institutions that have a very low percentage of students they admit, but have a very high count in applications. And they're very popular, very well known, and they're known for producing strong, you know, businesses, you know, business candidates, business owners, or whomever, right? Leaders, shall I say. And so, you know, on this one day, all the students that have applied that what they call regular decision, because there are three different type of decisions you can do early. So early decision is like, and I'm going to break it down like relationships real fast. So early decision is a monogamous relationship. You find one institution that you absolutely love and say, hey, I'm pledging my life to you. If you accept me, I'm coming. that gives you a smaller, very small percent chance higher of getting in because you got to get your application, everything in there early, typically November 1st, November 15th. Second one is early action, where it's like, hey, you know, I'm single, ready to mingle, but yet still I got these group of individuals that I want. I'm not committed, but I just really, really like you and I hope you like me, right? And so that still give you a little bit of boost, but not that much. And then the last is regular decisions like, hey, look, I'm just playing the field to see what's up, and that's it. And so regular decision admitted day is typically April 1st for these very selective schools, which is April 1st, which is April Fool's Day. And so these kids get these emails that say, hey, unfortunately, you were denied or all this on April Fool's Day. They're like, they're waiting on this. And so this kid was descending into LaGuardia, getting ready to go on tour Columbia, NYU. And before the wheels hit the ground, good, he got an email. Wheels hit the ground. They pull him to the gate. He's able to check his email. It says, hey, unfortunately, we are not accepting you. And he was there in New York to go visit Columbia, right? Get off. Mom called me. I talked to him. I said, hey, you know, you're a champion. Don't worry about it. Like, you're good. I told you these schools are hard to get into based on personalities, but it is what it is. Keep moving. Literally get to the hotel same day. Supposed to tour NYU the next day. Get an email right then. Hey, unfortunately, we're not accepting you. NYU 5.0, 35 on the ACT. Again, you know, mom is like, well, we're just going to catch a play on Broadway. And I was like, well, good thing is he already got into RIT. So let's go visit RIT, right? And so parents come back. They're super confused. They come to my office. And they're like, we just don't understand why. You know, why did he not get in? He's done everything right. And I was like, yes, he's done everything right. But he's competing against so many kids who've done everything right. So that 5.0 is just like a five-star player on an Alabama roster.
Right.
Great. You know, you can go to any other school and start. But here, you're behind two other five stars.
Yeah.
Make you got to wait your turn.
Yeah. So that leads me to my last question, which is, you know, other than engaging wherever possible with, you know, college prep you and prep intel, what piece of advice would you give some of these juniors and seniors who are applying or getting ready to apply to college? What's like the one piece of advice you would want them to consider?
Yeah. Use prep intel.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's pretty solid.
Yeah. But outside of that, it's the admission process can be fun if you remove the emotions out of it. Right. Okay. So don't get so caught up in your love for institution based on family legacy, friends, anything emotional. I need the institution to really, you know, look at me for who I am. But at the end of the day, it's my decision where I want to go, right? Just to kind of bring things in perspective, right? So you took your daughter to a college tour at two different schools. And, you know, basically, they did everything they could to try to make the institution look amazing, right? How many times have this institution come to your house?
Right.
So you don't have to have them come to your house to make your daughter look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Is you going to them because they got to put on the bells and whistles. Because at the end of the day, and here's a funny joke, like, what do you call a college with no students?
Out of business?
Closed.
Closed.
Absolutely, yeah. Right? Out of business. So with that being said, they need butts and seats.
Right.
And so they're going to do everything they can. So as long as that model stays in place, then a kid really has the choice to choose where they want to go. It's 5,000 colleges in this country alone, over 26,000 throughout the world.
Yeah.
They can find any institution they want to go to. It's just that they have to understand three key principles. You know, what are my needs, my wants, and what am I willing to compromise, right? If you say, hey, I want a dorm that looks like an apartment, and I want Starbucks on campus, I want all these different things, but then you also want to be able to have a strong, you know, discipline in microbiology or, you know, whatever it is that you're looking to get a degree out of, engineering or whatever, entrepreneurship. If they have two of these three things, right, they got strong academic rigor, you know, they have quality student life, but they don't have a Starbucks, are you willing to compromise on that? And that's it. Just understand, you know, what do you need, what do you want, and what are you willing to compromise? And just remove the emotions out of it, and you will enjoy the admission process. And then there's nothing wrong with shooting your shot. Just don't get emotionally attached to it.
Yeah, yeah. So, Jay, where can they find you? Where can they find Prep Intel? Where can they find you on socials?
Yeah, so you can find me, Jay Johnson. I'm on LinkedIn. I got on, like, Shades, probably. You know, I don't know when this will air. But Jay Johnson, 0129 on LinkedIn. You can find me on Facebook, Jay Johnson, same photo on LinkedIn. You can find Prep Intel much quicker. How about that? So you can find Prep Intel and College Prep U on Instagram, as well as Instagram and Twitter, or X, shall I say. Those handles belong to us, so you can find us there. And then most importantly, like, if you need anything, you know, if you got this, if you listen to this, you'll be able to find me. That's all I can say.
So do the work to find him on socials. I'm going to tell you right now, it's worthwhile, because if you do reach out to Jay, I can guarantee you he will respond back to you and engage in all of the best ways. So, Jay, really appreciate you being on the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much, man. Have a great, this has been amazing. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks. Yeah.